Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob podcast with These Football Times. My name is Stuart Horsfield and today we have an extra special guest joining us on the podcast. But before we come to talk to the guests and introduce them, first of all, I would just like to introduce my two co-hosts. So first of all, Mr. Stephen Scragg. Stephen, how are you?
Oh, we're very well, thanks, Stu. How's everything you're in?
Okay, yes, not too bad, thank you. Bit of a rush, but okay. Looking forward to this?
Oh, very much so. How can you not? This is going to be absolutely spectacular.
It is. Like I said, I can't believe we've managed to get him on as a guest. But before we come to our main guest, obviously...
No, So we've just got to say this is the blaggers podcast of all time, I think, isn't it?
I think it is. I still can't believe we've managed it. obviously, Gary, you're the other co-host who joins us for such an occasion. Are you well?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Mike. Can I echo what Stevie says? You know, we've had some great guests on the Lob podcast over the years, but no one with the experience, anything remotely resembling the guy we're going to talk to tonight. So it's going to be massively exciting and entertaining.
Okay, so without further ado, because essentially nobody wants to listen to us on this podcast. So tonight's guest is a gentleman that I spoke to probably 4 or 5 weeks ago for a project that I'm doing, and I asked him if he would be kind enough to be a guest on the podcast. Now, this gentleman has refereed at 3 World Cup tournaments. The common factor amongst them are the probably what is acknowledged as the greatest save in football. He was the man in the middle for the England versus Brazil game in 1970. He was again in the middle for the Italy versus Argentina 1978 World Cup fixture, which was a result that essentially saw Argentina leave Buenos Aires and go to Rosario for what many describe as one of the bravest refereeing performances of all time against a very hostile crowd. And finally, and why I wanted to track him down and speak to him, he was also the man in the middle for what is arguably the greatest World Cup game of all time. And if anybody knows me and asks me, it is definitely the greatest World Cup game of all time. Was in the middle for the Italy versus Brazil game, which saw a Paolo Rossi hat-trick put Brazil out of the 1982 World Cup. On top of all of that, this man has also been a linesman in the 1982 World Cup final, which sometimes gets forgotten about with some of the great games that he's refereed, and was also on standby should the 1982 final go to a replay. He would have been the referee for that replay. Tonight we are talking to Mr. Abraham Klein. Abraham, how are you?
First of all, thank you for all the compliments. I am excellent. I feel very good. I have a beautiful wife. I have a good life. I am in very good condition. Even my age, a little old, but mentally, I am half of my age.
That's good for this. What we need tonight is a really good memory. Is what we're after for this. like I say, first of all, again, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us about your refereeing career. Like I say, part of me feels like I should call you Mr. Klein, and I can't decide if that's the reverence that we all hold you in, or whether it's the fact that you're a referee, and that's probably how players probably should refer to referees in a more polite manner. So are you okay with being called Abraham, or would you prefer Mr. Klein?
You call me Abraham.
Okay, fantastic.
So I am Mr. Klein only for the players.
Yeah, unfortunately, none of us were good enough. Obviously, what we'd like to do is sort of talk through your career. Gary and Stephen, I know we'll have questions for you as well as we go along, but really, we're just interested in hearing you speak. I think, first of all, Matt, the first question then is how did you get into refereeing in the first place?
Well, I understand you asked me about my first World Cup games.
Yeah, that's fine. We can start there. That's no problem.
Okay. First of all, you must understand, when I arrived to Mexico in 1970 to the World Cup, I had only 4 international games, and only one of them was very important, between Poland and Italy in 1965. This was my first preliminary World Cup game. And the referees committee, they saw me, some of them, only in Mexico in 68, when I refereed the third, fourth place between Japan and Mexico. Mexico team was their favorite, but they lost against Japan. And I think they were very impressed of my refereeing that game, because when I asked later Sir Stanley Rose and Ken Aston how they take the risk to assign me to referee the World Cup England against Brazil. Well, they told me that I was in good condition, and they were in the opinion that I never will favorite a home team. So anyway, I was very lucky because, you know, a young referee, nobody knows me in the world. And behind me, players like Pelé, Jorginho, Tostão, Carlos Alberto, other side, Bobby Moore, Bobby Charlton, Gordon Banks, Francis Lee. He was the first player. I gave him a yellow card in the game. And, you know, when I saw all the players behind me, my hands were trembling and shaking. So I put my hands in my pocket in the tunnel. But when I went out from the tunnel, I should take my hands out. I cannot walk with my pocket in my hand, my hand in the pocket. So anyway, then I shake the both captains very strongly, because, you know, players, they feel the referee when they're shaking the hands. Not only players. Everybody feel your hands, how you behave later. So my hand was very strong. And about the game, I can tell you only one thing. That Pelé, of my opinion, one of the biggest player ever in the history, he wrote the introduction to my 2 books, The Referee's Referee and The Master of the... It is in Hebrew, this book. But anyway, a player like Pelé, if he wrote the introduction, it means something for me, that I was very correct in that game. And I think that the both team were happy with my refereeing. This was my first game. And I was saying another thing, which maybe you don't know. After I finished my game, the referees committee, they were very happy, and they assigned me to the quarterfinal to referee the game between Italy and Mexico, the home team. But what happened to me 2 days later, after they assigned me, one day before the game, I had the Montezuma, exactly what Gordon Banks had in England. So both of us, we saw the game in television. But what I can remember than I was with fever 40 Celsius in the bed in the hotel, two people come to visit me. One was Dr. Kayser, who at that time was the general secretary of FIFA, and Ken Eston, who was later my mentor for many, many years. And after every game which I refereed, he wrote me a letter. At that time was not like today that you have
email,
you know, and all the kinds that we have today. He used to write in his handwork all the time how to improve my refereeing. I was very lucky with him. So anyway, this was my only game in Mexico, and both of them, they told me that it is not your last World Cup. So I must tell you one thing, that 2 years later was a very big tournament in Brazil. They call it Copa Independencia do Brasil. It was 150 years to celebrate the Brazilian nation independence. They call it Copa Independencia. And then I have a special invitation from Sir Stanley Rose and Joao Havelange, who was his vice president, and Ken Eston. They invite me to participate in Brazil in this tournament. I refereed 6 games in the middle. I don't think that any other referee in the world had 6 games in the middle in one tournament and another 3 on the line. I refereed the final. It was between Portugal and Brazil. Brazil won 1-0. They were very happy. I received after the game a gold whistle, which is not in the FIFA museum. You know, I donated 100 items to the FIFA museum, but this gold is still in my home. So anyway, in the final, both of them, they told me that you will be on the list. This is my book, if you see this, The Master of the Whistle in Hebrew. It was published in 2010. This is the gold whistle which I have in my home. So anyway, you know, in 72, I was sure I'll be on the list in 1974. But we all know what happened to the 11 athletes in Munich in the Olympic Games. At that night, when I heard this tragedy of our nation, I know at that moment that I will see the World Cup in Munich in my house, in television. And exactly this happened. I was on the list in the last days. And then they called me and they told me, nobody will want to take the risk to have you after what happened 2 years before. I understood. I understand everything. But you must know another thing, that for 4 years, from 1972 till 1976, I didn't referee no games in the world, because all the nations didn't want to take the risk to have me. So you must understand my feeling for 4 years not to referee not even one game international, only in Israel League. And I must tell you that the football in my country, I'm very sorry to tell you, is very poor. It was poor and it's the same today. And every Saturday, going here in this country to referee the teams in terrible fields. Today we have a very good stadium. We have beautiful stadium, but we don't have good players. But at that time, you know, for 4 years, I suffered, and I looked around all my referees' friends having the World Cup games, international games, and I still stay only in my country. But they told me, Ken Eston told me, you know, he used to spoke with me, wait, your time will come. And my time come. They invited me to the Montreal Olympic Games and later on to 78.
Okay.
Now, if you want to know about 78,
I do, but just can I just 1 second, Abraham? I'm just going to ask Gary first of all. Gary, I know you're slightly older than Stephen and I, and I know we make comments about that quite often, Gary. But is there anything that you sort of that you want to ask Abraham? You know, with regards to the 1970 World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm not sure this is true, Abraham, but I was doing some research this afternoon on because when we're going to speak to you. I read a story that somebody was saying that the England-Brazil game, that when you blew your whistle for full time, nobody heard, and you let the game run a bit longer because you were enjoying it so much, and you played another 2 or 3 minutes before you could blow and make the players hear. Is that true?
Yes, exactly. I tell you what happened. I used the Balilla whistle, Italian whistle, very, very strong. I already used the whistle very strong. So if I whistled in Maracanã, my wife saw it in Haifa as well. But what happened? You know, I enjoyed the game very, very much, like the players. You know, a referee must enjoy the game, must love the game. And what happened in this game? I always told everybody this was a concert, this was an opera with 22 fantastic players with a young referee. And then I whistled to the end of the game, but nobody heard my whistle. And they continued to play. And then I understand and I told myself, let them to play another 2 minutes. Just play the game because they want to play. You know, as usually, one team want to finish the game. But in this time, even England, even Brazil, they want to play more and more. They enjoy the game.
That's a brilliant story, Abraham. Thank you for that. I mean, we're not ready, so I wasn't sure. I mean, it seemed like it was probably true, but there again, also that it probably wasn't. But that's a fantastic story, so thank you for that.
Stephen, obviously, I'll sort of bring you in because So, Stephen, any questions for Abraham to begin with regards to either the 1970 World Cup or the 1974 World Cup?
Yeah, if we could just hang on about 1970 for a minute as well. I mean, it was the only World Cup that Israel qualified for. Now, what was the experience? What was Israel like as a nation to know that you were at the World Cup as a referee and the team was there to compete as well?
I tell you, in 1970, we had the best team ever in this country. And we were in a group together with Sweden, together with Uruguay, I think, and Italy. And they play very well, our team. I didn't say, but they play very well. But since 1970, this was the last and the first World Cup, very bad team.
I just ask Abraham, I know we, you know, like I say, we spoke earlier about, so it was just you and I, I think perhaps the listeners might want to know, obviously the 1970 England versus Brazil game is very famous for the Gordon Banks save from Pelé's header. What was your view and your thought of that save when Gordon Banks made it?
I tell you something about Gordon Banks. I met Gordon Banks later with one eye when he played in Memphis in the North American Soccer League. Still with one eye, he was a fantastic goalkeeper. He was one of the best ever in the world I saw, and I saw many, many games, even today. This save, I have the signature, somebody sent it to me, the signature of Gordon Banks when he saved the ball from Pelé. This was something that I never saw in my life, even till today. He was a genius goalkeeper with a genius player like Pelé. It was something, and I was very happy I was in that game. I was a part of that game. I still remember this, and I saw this picture.
Were the players, like, you know, you just said, Abraham, that it was your first World Cup game, and you were, you know, I mean, we're talking about, you know, some of the greatest players that have ever played the game, so players like Pelé, Bobby Moore, Carlos Alberto, were they very polite to you? Were they very, you know, did they listen to what you say? Did they accept what you say? Or did they try to intimidate you in any way, knowing that you were, it was your first World Cup game?
I tell you something. First of all, the both teams, you know, the both captains, Carlos Alberto and Bobby Moore, behind me, I don't know if they spoke together what kind of referee they have today, because nobody knows about me, you know. Let's say the Olympic Games is nothing, you know, to the World Cup. But I must tell you, in the first 10 minutes, when I like to play, and I use always, in all my games, to use the advantage, because I think that the best thing that a referee can do in a game, let the players to play until they play an honest game. And what happened in this game, when I gave the yellow card to Francis Lee, they understood that is somebody that they can trust him. And I think that the yellow card which I gave Francis Lee, first of all the Brazilian players were around him, because otherwise, if I shouldn't give him the yellow card, I think I will be in trouble in that game. So they trust me after the yellow card. And the most thing, and I think that in that game, they understood that I respect the players. You know, a referee, if he wants that the players will respect him, he should respect the players and protect them. Because I remember that Pelé in 1966 World Cup, he was moved out with a stretcher, he was injured, and they decided not to play again. And in this game, not only Pelé, but all the players, they understood that I'd protect them. Nobody was injured. I think for a referee, the most important thing to finish the game was 22 players, the same like they start in the beginning of
Wonderful.
The game.
Gary, is there anything else before we move on to Argentina in 1978? Is there anything else you would like to ask Abraham about 1970 or 74?
Yeah, well, I guess because obviously the tournament was played in Mexico. This is perhaps something that I'm sure will have affected Abraham over time. The difference between how the laws of the game are understood between South America and the European countries, was that ever an issue for you, especially in that tournament?
I tell you something. Your question is about the way they played South America and Europe?
Yes, correct, yes.
I must tell you something. You know, the South American players, they playing different in the past. Today is, because today we have many South American players playing in England and everywhere in the world. Yeah. But in that time, in South America, they expect from the referee for each body contact the referee to whistle for a foul, which in England or in other countries in Europe, it's normally, you know, short game in England, Brazil. I remember shoulder by shoulder, you know, was no penalty. And many players from Brazil, from South America, to whistle for penalty. You know, I was on the line in the first game between Brazil and Czechoslovakia. Brazil won 4-1. The first goal was a Czech player. They lead 1-0. And I saw in the game that the Brazilian players, they expect from the referee to whistle for each body contact, which was not correct. And I learned a lot, and I was very lucky that I was on the line in the first Brazilian team. So I saw them, for example, in one of the games I remember against Czechoslovakia, Rivelino, outside the penalty area, body contact, he was on the ground, and the referee whistled, and it was a free kick. And, you know, Rivelino was a player in 1970, that a free kick for him was like a penalty. So I learned a lot in that game. And also, you know, South American players like to dive, like to dive in a swimming pool, you know. And many referees, you know, they are whistling. I was a lifeguard, so I know what means to dive in a swimming
pool. Stephen, just before we this move to the last sort of question, but is there anything else you would like to know about 1970, Stephen?
Yeah, well, the 74, the interesting one. That gap between 1972 and 1976, away from the international games, was there any point in time that you thought you would never get the chance again?
I tell you something. In 1970, you ask? No. You know, when Ken Aston and Dr. Kaiser, when they told me that this tournament will be not your last tournament. And then in 1974, I told you before why I was not invited there, signed to referee there. Ken Aston called me at that time. You know, at that time, telephone was very expensive, not like today. But we used to spoke each other. And he told them, your time will come. Continue to, you know, I want to finish my refereeing career in Israel. I told him, Ken, if I'm not refereeing more in the world, you know, to referee in my country, at that time was nobody was paid and was very dangerous to referee in this country because fences were very close to the field of the play. They're rough players. And I didn't enjoy the game in my country. I told him, look, I'm refereeing because I want to enjoy the game. I enjoy the players. And he told me, be patient, the time will come, the time will come, and the time come.
So, Abraham, if we can just move you on to a World Cup that I find very interesting and fascinating, not only from a football, but a political sense. Obviously, the World Cup was played in Argentina, that was under a military dictatorship, and you were given the Italy-Argentina game that essentially saw Argentina move away from Buenos Aires into Rosario. And, you know, same as Gary, I've read a lot about this game and your performance, and everybody was full of praise for your performance, especially for the penalty that you didn't give to Argentina just before half-time. I just wonder if you could talk us through your experiences at the 1978 World Cup.
I tell you something about this World Cup. First of all, you know, I didn't tell you before, but I'm now telling you. When I refereed my first international game, which was in Italy, 65, I decided to be a professional referee. You know, today, all the referees in the world are professional, well paid. You can be a rich man if you are in the first class refereeing the World Cup. At that time, you know, nobody was paid. But for me, money in my life was not important. I decided to be a professional referee. It means preparing myself mentally and physically to learn everything about in order to be ready for everything in the game. If you ask me about Argentina, I flew to South Africa before the World Cup. I tell you why. Because in Israel at that time in summer, it's very, very hot. 35, 36 degrees, sometimes 40 degrees Celsius. Argentina was winter. If I'm talking about preparation and professionally, it means in everything. Nutrition, about the weather, the body, etc. And I understood that in South America, I can prepare myself for 3 weeks before Argentina. So I flew from Cape Town to Argentina in the winter, and I was ready to the weather. Because to coming from hot weather to cold weather is not exactly the best thing for the body. I arrived there, and before that game, I refereed in Rome, England against Italy, and Ken Aston was in the game. He was very happy, even if he's an Englishman. and the and England lost 2-0. He was happy to sign up for him. And he was there. He was not at that time chairman of the referees committee, but he has the influence with all the referees committee members. So anyway, when I arrived to Mexico, to Argentina, I was very surprised that the last game was Italy against Argentina, and they assigned me to referee the game because this game was the most important game in the first round, especially for Argentina. The both teams have the same points. And we remember the both game, I was in the game in Buenos Aires when Argentina plays against Hungary and against France. I'm not talking about the referees because I never talk about other referees in my life. But I saw the game and I learned a lot about the pressure of the crowd, about Videla with all the generals. They all the time were standing up and everybody knows them and saw them. And they tried to influence all the referees in Argentina. The same was with me.
Carry on.
When I start the game, I tell you about the game. When I start the game between Argentina and Italy, all the 80,000 people in the stadium, or 70,000, 80,000, all the time they try to pressure my refereeing. Some of the players dive in the penalty area, and all the crowd, they were whistling against me, remembering my mother was far away from there, living in Haifa, and tried to influence me all the time. It was very, very difficult the first half time. It was 0-0. And then, when I went down to the tunnel, all the 80,000 people, they whistled against me, they shouted against me, and they tell everything what they can in Latin, which I didn't understand. But anyway, when I went to my dressing room, I made tactics to the second half. You know, a referee must make tactics before the game, during the game, in the halftime, and after the game to analyze all his mistakes. So I went to my dressing room, I spoke with my two linesmen, we analyzed the first half. I always ask them, tell me please, what was my mistake to learn to the second half. And then in the last moment, I understood that before I will go out from the tunnel to the stadium, 80,000 people will whistle against me, abuse me, and so on and so on. It's not good feeling when you hear these things in a stadium and you know everybody is against you. You are alone on the field. Alone, with 22 players. I have no problem with the players, not before the game, not during the game, and not after the game. So then I told my linesman, go to the tunnel, to the end of the tunnel, and when you will see Mario Kempes, who's a big guy, and Passarella, who was the captain, they start to go out from the tunnel, we will go together with the Argentinian team outside to the field of play. Because when Italy went outside, the same thing, abuse, whistling against them. And then we went outside with Argentinian players and the big applause of 70,000, 80,000 to 80,000 people to all of us. I was very happy, you know.
Brilliant.
There was no problem in the game. Bettega scored a goal. They won the game, and I remember that after the game, they come to my dressing room and they told me, don't go out because people are outside and waiting to you. I told them, look, I am go outside. I'm not afraid because I understand, I feel when the players are against a referee. If they are whistling during the game, nothing happens. They buy the ticket, they can do what they want. But nobody will hurt me. Because I feel the team, you know, and the crowd in Argentina at that time, they were always on the street, before the game, after the game, because, you know, it was terrorism at that time. Terrible feeling was to be on the street. But anyway, I was happy with my refereeing because every referee, he knows alone his mistakes. If he analyzes and is correct with himself, he didn't need to wait to the assessor. And I feel at that game that I do my job. And what happened later, they assigned me to referee West Germany in the second round against Austria. They call this game till today the Schmach Cordoba. Schmach in English is the shame of Cordoba. Because the same what happened to other teams, West Germany were world champion and they lost against Austria. They never lost in their life. Krankel, the big player, scored two goals and one own goal. So they won 3-2. And then, you know, everybody told me that I am candidate to referee the final in Argentina. I read many, many books and many newspapers in many languages. And I met many people and many journalists. Everybody told me during, before the final, even Pelé wrote in one of the newspapers, and Jack Taylor, he was there as a commentator, they both of them wrote that the final in Argentina will be my final. But I understood later that Della was against me because they lost. This was the only game that they lost. How they influence the other members of FIFA, I don't know. But I know one thing, that the decision was that the two last game will be Gonella from Italy and me. So Gonella cannot referee Italy-Brazil. So he refereed the final, and I refereed Italy-Brazil. I must tell you, I was very disappointed, but still very happy that to referee two teams like Brazil and Italy, and I refereed Brazil three times, 70, 78, and 82, and Italy two times. It's still a big honor for me. So upset
Gary, but I was happy. You know, I'm sure you've got
a
question here for Abraham about this particular World Cup.
Only one. Okay, so I mean, first, Abraham, I'd like to ask you. You mentioned that before you refereed the Argentina-Italy game, that you watched Argentina play a couple of times before. Did you take note of certain characteristics of the Argentine player so that you could be aware of what might happen in the game you're going to referee? So before you refereed the Argentina-Italy game, you'd watched Argentina play a couple of times. Did you notice anything about the Argentine players? Did you have to think, OK, I need to remember this about this player or that player does that? Did you analyse them in advance of the game?
I'll tell you something. When I watched the both teams and I saw Argentina and how they play, I told you before that I make tactics in all my life, in all the games that I refereed. I noticed all the players from Argentina. The same I noticed all the players from other teams. And as usually, when I understood that a player will be played roughly, brutally, or strongly, I will be very close to him to watch him all the time. Then he will be very careful to do what he intends to do.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to mean. The other thing I was going to mention to you, and you mentioned about the final and why you didn't get the final. I read somewhere that the Argentinians weren't happy about you because of the relationship between the Netherlands and Israel, the close relationship between the two countries, and they thought that might influence you. I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't, but were you aware of that?
I tell you something. Cooper wrote in his book, if you don't have, I will send it to you, in one of his pages about... it was in my house, and he wrote an excellent book, Ajax, and I think I'm the Jewish. And first of all, when Cooper was here, he asked me if the Argentinians know that I was 1 year in Netherlands before I arrived to Israel from Romania. From 47 to 48, I was 1 year in Netherlands. But nobody knows about this thing that I was there, because nobody asked me before. Nobody knows that I was there. And the relationship between, I don't think this was the reason. This cannot be the reason, because otherwise I should referee the game, the first game, Italy against Argentina.
True.
So
true.
The only reason was that they lost the game.
Stephen, obviously, okay. You know, yourself.
Okay, thank you for that.
A question for Abraham on 1978?
Yeah, I mean, 78, you know, you referee three games there. Is there one that stands out more than the other at all? Is there a favourite game from the 1978 World Cup that you refereed?
My favourite team in this World Cup?
The 1978 World Cup.
I tell you, the first game between Italy and Argentina. I mean, Italy-Argentina, I think this was my best game ever. Because it was very difficult to referee a team, a home team, when they lost a team in that regime.
I suppose, Gary, you know, obviously, I know, Gary, you have a big interest in politics and football. And I just, before we move on to the 1982 World Cup, I just wondered if you had a question for Abraham around the politics of Argentina and that World Cup.
Of course, now, obviously, Abraham, in Argentina at the time, there was a military dictatorship. Did you feel more pressure from the political establishment in Argentina than you would have, say, in Mexico?
Well, you know, in Argentina was something that I never saw in my life. You know, the regime was terrible. You know what happened? That they threw people from airplane to the sea, and people disappeared every day from the streets. It was very dangerous to walk on the street. We used to walk on the street in Avenida de Julio, Nuevo de Julio, the largest street in the world. Before the World Cup start, we saw tanks on the streets, soldiers on the streets. It was very dangerous to be there. So I think Johan Cruyff didn't come from the same reason to play with Netherlands.
Can I ask you a question?
It was not easy.
Just then, when you refereed Argentina, did the Argentine players either appear or feel nervous because of the pressure of playing at a home World Cup and the pressure that the dictatorship might have put on the players? Did they seem nervous to you?
I tell you something. Players were not nervous, but I remember that Videla told the players, you won the World Cup or you die on the field. You understand? The players were nervous, but they understood that they must win this World Cup. And they won the World Cup. I'm not talking about Peru.
I suppose, you know, we move on to 1982. But before we do, Stephen, do you have a question about the Peru Argentina game at all?
Well, just general thoughts on that amazing game with Peru and Argentina. You know, there's obviously the conspiracy theories that everyone kind of like grown up with. You know, do you think there's any truth in the fact that Peru laid themselves down for that game against Argentina?
I tell you something. It never happened in the World Cup that Brazil play before Argentina. And when Argentina knows the result of Brazil, they know exactly how many goals they should score to go to the final. So this format was never before and never after this World Cup.
Enough said.
Abraham, we're now going to move, obviously, to the main reason why I contacted you in the first, other than to be on the podcast, but the main reason why I contacted you, and that's the 1982 World Cup. And obviously, for me, it is the greatest game, I think, that's ever been played at a World Cup. It was certainly the greatest team that I've ever seen play the game. And, you know, you had the perfect view, the perfect neutral view as the referee. And that game between Italy and Brazil. And I know we've talked a little bit about that game, but were you happy to be given such a what turned out to be such a hugely influential game?
Okay, now I tell you something about the game and something before the game. When I arrived to Madrid, a few days later start a big war, the second Lebanon war, and my son at that time, and that time participates, he was a soldier, a young, very young soldier, and he was in front in Lebanon. In the first days, in the seminar, I tried to call every day my home, and there was no news for my son. And you must understand, as a father, my body was in Madrid, but my heart was in Lebanon. And I tried to call every day what happened to my son. There was no news. And from the journalist that I met in Madrid, they told me that we have casualties, soldiers wounded, and some of them killed, and they have no news for my son. So you must understand, it was my third World Cup, my last one. I was 48 at that time. And I was in a terrible situation. I was not able to concentrate in the World Cup because my mind was all the time in Lebanon. And I decided to do something which nobody do it before because nobody was in the same situation. I spoke with Dr. Franchi, who was the chairman of the referees committee and vice president of FIFA. And I told him that, please sign me only as fourth official and linesman, because I am not able to concentrate totally, and I know that I have big responsibility as a referee in the World Cup. He looked at me, he told me, I understand, because your son, you have no news from him, but I cannot promise you that later we will assign you as a referee. I told me, I understand, but I have still the responsibility to FIFA and to you and to all the football nations that I hear. And then, day after today, I called my son and they appoint me, I assign me as a linesman between Brazil and New Zealand, 4-1 for Brazil, and Italy, Peru, a linesman, and another two games as fourth official. And then one day, I had some good news for my son. And he called me and he told me I'm alive. He understood from journalists that they were in the war, that I have no games, that I'm not refereeing. He understood why I'm not refereeing. And he told me by phone, you can start to referee, I'm alive. And then I ran to his room in the same hotel we stay and told Dr. Franchi, I have good news for my son. And I left his room. A few days later, after the first round finished, now look what kind of format was in that World Cup. They assigned me in group 3 to the third game. And nobody knows, three referees. The first referee was Nicolae Rainea from Romania. He refereed the first game between Argentina and Italy. He was the only one that he knows which team is going to referee. The second game was between the losing team against Brazil. The referee was Rubio from Mexico. And the third game, I was assigned to referee Brazil against the winning from the first game. So everybody from the referees committee, all the journalists, they come to congratulate me and they told me, your dream is coming. You will referee Argentina, Brazil. I was very happy because all my life, all my dream was to referee these two teams because I know that they are fighting each other and I like games when they are fighting games, not easy games. I never liked in my life easy games. So what happened? Italy, who qualified after three ties, only with goal average, they played terrible games in their group, Cameroon and Peru and Poland. And what happened? They start the game with Argentina, with Paolo Rossi. Piazzot insist that Paolo Rossi will play, even if it was very bad in all the first three games. Didn't score no goals and was terrible player. All the journalists, they didn't understand Piazzot why he took Paolo Rossi to the first game against Argentina. And we know what happened. Italy lead 2-0 and then the end of the game was 2-1. I must tell you, for the first time in my life, I never favorite a nation when I am refereeing. I was very sad, very disappointed what happened, that Italy beat Argentina. Now I told everybody, I'm going to referee a game between Brazil and Italy. The result will be 5-0, 6-0. Nobody will remember this game. And they will forget that I refereed the World Cups because, you know, people remember the last game, maybe the first game. They also remember who was the first lady and the last one. So anyway, I was very upset. And then I saw the second game between Brazil and Argentina. Brazil was the best team with the players like Zikos, Dr. Socrates, Falcao, Junior. Fantastic team. The best team after 1970, which I still think was better than this team because they are World Cup. They won the World Cup. But many people think, and you too,
I do,
that this was the best team ever that Brazil had. They were very, very unlucky. Believe me, they were unlucky. When they start the game, you know, I make tactics. I know Gentile, how he played in the game against Argentina. It was very close to Maradona, because Maradona was a super player. And I made tactics to be very close to him. When I start the game, I was sure that the end will be 5-0. But after 5 minutes, when Paolo Rossi scored the first goal, the bell ring that this game is not exactly what I think before the game. And then when Dr. Socrates equalized 1-1 with a beautiful goal, I understood that this game will be a game that everybody will remember. And now we are in 2020, 38 years, and you call me,
that's right.
And you are writing a book about this game. It means that this game, and not only you, you know, everywhere in the world, when I am traveling and I am meeting people, football people, other people, everybody introduced me, Mr. Klein, England, Brazil, Italy, Brazil. And you know this game, and you know what happened later? 2-1, Paolo Rossi again, Falcao, fantastic goal, 2-2. And what happened in the last 5 minutes? I will never forget in my life. It was invasion like in Normandy. 10 Brazilian players invasion in the penalty areas of Italy. And you know, during the game, I make tactics, not in the half time. I decided that in the last 10 minutes, I'd be very close to the Italian goalkeeper Dino Zoff. And I stood most of the time inside the penalty area. And then Dino Zoff, after a very strong header from Oscar, I think it was Oscar from Brazil, he lie on the ground with the ball half inside, half outside. It means no goal. At that time, was not the video goal line like today. At that time, was the referee and the linesman. And I understood that the linesman was an excellent linesman, Chan Chan Tun from Hong Kong. He cannot see the goal line because all the 20 players were inside the penalty area. So I understood that I must be in a position to see if something happening in the goal line, because otherwise you can be 89 minutes. Excellent. In 1 minute, you destroyed your career. Because today you have the VAR. But at that time was no VAR, only the eyes of the referee. And today, most of the referees are standing outside the penalty area in the corner kicks. I was on the line, and I saw exactly. And then Dino Zoff lie on the ball for a few seconds. And you can see in television, and the Brazilian players were outside the goal line. They waved their hands for goal. For them was enough 3-3 to play against Poland in the semifinal. But I was there. I waved with my hand, no goal. And in replay, later, you can see that was no goal. I think this was my best decision in my life. Otherwise, today, I think you will not ask me these questions. No interview today.
Stephen, you know, you share a love of this tournament as much as I do, of the same age. I'm sure you must have a question about this World Cup.
Yeah, this World Cup
it's got a special vibrancy to it. You know, when you referee a game like that, and you're coming towards the end of your time in refereeing World Cup games. You know, the speed of the game, the skill of the game. You know, what affects you more? Is it the physical side of it, or is it all in the head? You know, does it drain you physically or emotionally the most?
I tell you something. First of all, I told you that I was a professional referee, mentally and physically. I was a teacher, a gym teacher also, but I was an athlete when I was young. And I used to train every day in the morning and in the evening in stadium in Haifa when I am living. The mayor gave me the key to the stadium with light for preparing myself to the World Cup. I used to go there in the evening with light in the morning before I go to work. I didn't work too much, you know, because I was a professional referee, as I told you. And it was very important for me, also for my country and for my... My minister of sport, he told me, I was at that time inspector in school. You know, inspector didn't need to work. He just go to see teachers. And the teachers were very happy when I didn't come to see them how they work. So I try to train myself all the time. If you are physically good, you can run in the last minute like in the first minute. I was never tired, you know, and also mentally, if you are physically very prepared yourself, mentally, you can. Your decision is perfect because if you are mentally tired in the last moment, in the last minute of the game, most of the referees, they make mistakes because physically they are not good enough. So I have no problem with this. I run very good, better than the players. You know, I used to run in one game between 10 and 15 kilometers. In every game, international games, I will always need the ball.
Gary, I'm sure you know you must have multiple Wonderful. Questions as well.
Three things I'd just like to sort of say, you know, and we get Abraham's thoughts. You mentioned Abraham earlier before, when you mentioned about Zoff, that you only had the eyes of the referee. Well, you actually had your ability and experience as well, you know, the quality to make you an outstanding referee, to be in the right position. So, you know, it wasn't only the eyes, it was your ability as well to get you there. But I also agree with you about 1970 Brazil being better than 1982. And I know Steve's going to shake his head here, but I agree, because I'm old enough to remember 1970 as well. So I agree, Pelé, Tostão, Jorginho, Carlos Alberto, Gerson, fantastic team. But what the question I'd like to ask you is, in the Brazil-Italy game in 1982, you booked, you gave a yellow card to Gentile very early in the game. Was this a sort of statement that you are in control of the game?
Well, I tell you something. Players like Gentile, I think that in each game, I think so, he had a yellow card, because he was a player that I understand that the coach told him you must be very close to the key player from the other team.
Yeah.
And in this occasion, you know, I remember another game, Tardelli, also Italian player. I refereed 1 year later in 79, the rest of the world against Argentina in Buenos Aires. And in that game, also Argentina lost the game 2-1. I sent off Tardelli from the field because I remember that Biarzo told him you must be very, very close to Maradona. Maradona at that time was an excellent player. He was only 18. But he was a genius. And I gave a yellow card to Tardelli in the first half. And later on, I gave him a red card. So they played with 10 players, and they still won the game 2-1. So the same was with Gentile. I was very close to him, and he understood that he must be very careful, because otherwise he will be sent off from the field.
Can I just ask, perfect answer.
Thank you.
The World Cup final, you were the linesman in the World Cup final. Now, between West Germany and Italy. Now, in the semi-final between West Germany and France, Harald Schumacher made that terrible challenge on Battiston. And I know you would be a neutral, and I know you were a professional referee and linesman and always neutral, but did you want Italy to win the final?
Well, I tell you something. A referee never... I'm talking about myself. I don't know about other people. When I went to referee two teams, for me, the two teams are the same. And, you know, many times people ask me, as a Jewish Israeli, survive from the Holocaust, if I am able to referee a German team or an Austrian team. I told everybody, for me, when I'm going to referee, all the teams are the same. All the players are the same. I respect all of them. I protect all of them. And I referee them the same way. When I was in the final on the line, I was the first linesman with Coelho. In my opinion, he was the best referee in 1982. And I was very happy that I was his first linesman. And I also was signed to referee the replay for the first time in the history. It was replay in 82. But we know that the result was 3-1. I asked in the halftime, Coelho, he was my very good friend of mine till today, I told him, look, you are in the final. Please finish the game with a tie. I want also to have a final. It's my last chance. So anyway, you know, Italy played better than West Germany in the final. After the first round, after they beat Brazil, they play very well, you know. I can't understand how they play in the first round.
But still today,
I think that Brazil was the best team in 82.
Can I ask a quick question, Abraham? Because in those days, and I remember back in 1966 and the World Cup in England, the linesmen were referees. Now, in modern-day football, referees don't aren't linesmen anymore. It's a different skill. Did you find it difficult moving from being a referee to being a linesman?
I tell you something. I was very happy to be a linesman in the World Cup. And also in some games in Israel, I was linesman with other referees. And if you think that assistant referee is much better, I'm not sure. Because today I saw many assistant referees calling for a foul for the referee. You know, I always used to tell my linesmen, even if they were international linesmen in the World Cup, please, a foul, leave it to me. Only if it's very close to you and I am on the other side of the field, and I didn't see this. But because I was always in very good physical condition, I told them, don't worry, I'll be very close to the action. Leave it, the foul, to me. Because I think that in many, many occasions today, the assistant referees, they are signaling to the referees about fouls, which I'm not agree with them. Because foul, there's no uniformity between the referees and not with assistant referees. Sometimes is no uniformity with the referee in the same game. So I was very happy when I had two linesmen, famous linesmen. I give you some example. In the game Brazil-Italy, in Argentina, in the third, fourth place, my linesman was Palotai, Karo Palotai from Hungary. I speak Hungarian, it's my mother language. Karo Palotai was one of the best referees in the world, of my opinion, together with Jack Taylor and Colina, and maybe some others. He was on the line. I was very close to him, and he told me in Hungarian language, be very close to Rivelino, because Rivelino is not the same Rivelino in 1970. He's very nervous. You must be very close to him, otherwise you have a problem with him. An assistant referee cannot tell me this because he didn't understand the game. It's okay. They changed the system. It's okay. But for me, I love when I had international referees on the line, and I do the same. I had Coelho, believe me, with my full heart. And he was very happy with my, you know, with my health. And the other one, Christoph from Czechoslovakia. We both help him very much. It's very important.
Wonderful. Stephen,
fantastic.
You know,
fantastic.
We've travelled what has been an incredible journey through four World Cup tournaments. Do you have any sort of final questions for Abraham?
Yeah, just one more on that Brazil-Italy game in 82. I've always thought that the location of that game, playing at Espanyol's game at ground of the Sarria, you know, added to the atmosphere of that game. It wouldn't have quite been the same thing had it been at the Nou Camp for Barcelona's ground, that big cavernous stadium. You know, what was the atmosphere like at ground level? Do you notice an atmosphere like that, or do you block it out somehow?
I tell you something about Sarria. I never understand why this group, number three, with three world champions, Argentina, Brazil, and Italy, play in Sarria. Till today, and you know, in Brazil, they call it the tragedy of Sarria, Barcelona, like the Schmach, Cordoba, the same. It was a tragedy for them. I will never understand why they play in this small stadium. It's 40,000, 42,000 people, packed with 20,000 Brazilian, 20,000 Italian, maybe some other people. Where inside, I don't know how. It's a very small stadium, very close to the crowd, to the public. It was very difficult because the fence was very close. I didn't understand what was the reason. I don't know. But the stadium was small. Packed, full packed, you know, and the pressure was okay. I like the pressure, you know, because when it's big pressure, I think that the performance is much better, you know.
Gary,
I think so.
Gary, a final question for you, for Abraham at all, about anything to do with World Cups and refereeing. We don't get this chance very often.
I mean, there's one big burning question that I've been wanting to ask you all night, ever since Stu mentioned that you were kind enough to come on the podcast with us, is what do you think about VAR?
Well, first of all, you know, this question, everybody asks me.
Yeah, I bet.
Everywhere in the world. We have been half a year before in Bermuda. I was there six times. And everybody asked me about the VAR. I was in Budapest. I was in everywhere when I met referees, journalists. What is your opinion? I was in Moscow in the World Cup, in the exhibition. I had some items. My items from the museum. They brought it to Moscow. It was an Italian journalist. You can read it in Italian language about the VAR. So my answer is very simple. The VAR is excellent, but immediately I come to the but, because if I'm talking about the VAR, I can give you many, many examples, but I give you only one or two, it will be enough. Maradona in Mexico, 86. I was there. Everybody saw the first goal. The referees, the three referees, they missed, you know? Human being, they didn't see everything. So in this case, I think that the goal will be disallowed. Maybe Argentina will not play in the final. England play excellent. The result was 0-0. And you must understand that in the quarterfinal, when 1-0 a team is leading, the tactics of the coach changing immediately because they want to equalize. 1-0 to lose or 2-0 is the same.
Yeah.
So I think Bobby Robson was the coach there.
Yes, yes.
And he changed his tactics immediately. And then come the second goal. So anyway, in this occasion, the VAR was beautiful. But was no VAR at that time. You talk about Batiston Schumacher. I was there. I think the VAR in this occasion, or Henry. And you have many, many other examples. But it's one thing that if a referee used the VAR too many times, he lost his authority. Player come to complain, go to the VAR, go to the monitor. I saw many games in my country. I saw games in all the leagues in Europe, in England, many games in England. I remember one game, Manchester City, in 94 minutes. They score a goal and, you know, the coach is not used to shake, to kiss the players, like the coach of Liverpool. Everybody was very happy. And then they canceled the goal. I'm not talking if it was right or not. It's one problem, of my opinion, the VAR. It's about the uniformity. Especially in fouls and handballs inside the penalty area. I'm not talking about 100% penalty. You need a VAR. And if you need a VAR, it's still, you can, first of all, feel the players. You know, when it's 100% penalty, the players accept the decision of the referee. Then they are not coming to complain. But when it's a 50-50, now, I'll give you an example from London. And I told you before, it's all uniformity. It can be a foul that if the opinion of the referee was not intentional inside the penalty area, it will not whistle, or a handball. But we see many things that the referee is very close to the penalty area. He's not whistling, he's not warning a penalty, and then he's going to the monitor, according to the VAR, he changed his mind. Sometimes you see a referee standing there 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. You know, a referee must take the decision finally, immediately, even in the monitor. If he's standing 2-3 minutes, is something wrong, he didn't know what to do. Sometimes a referee is afraid from the VAR. It's another thing. Today, if a referee avoid the goal or disallow the goal for offside or penalty, he's always think and he's told to everybody, it's not my decision, it's the VAR decision. He's not responsible for the game more. So again, the VAR is fantastic for 100% things, but they must do something about the uniformity, because sometimes the intervention of them is too many times, too much. Secondly, I saw many referees, they never use the VAR, because if you are in a good position, if you are strong enough, if your decisions are right, then the VAR can drink a beer or a whiskey. I don't think you know that in our times, and I used to say to everybody that the best refereeing team was in 1970, because for the first time, Ken Aston, you know, he was the inventor of the yellow and the red card, they used for the first time, Chencher was the German referee used in the first opening game, I used it against Francis Lee. No player was sent off from the field. And I tell you why. Because the performance of the referees in 1970 was, in my opinion, fantastic. They didn't need to send off players because the authority and they respect the players, the players respect the referees. At that time, they didn't need the VAR. But today, if they need the VAR too many times, maybe something is wrong with the referees. But still, the VAR must be used because for the justice. You cannot allow the team, if a player is cheating or diving inside the penalty. Today the players are very afraid from the VAR. You know, in the past, many players dive in the penalty area. Today, very few of them do this because they are very, very afraid, because if it's the second yellow card, it can be sent off. So still, please use the VAR. I think the World Cup, we were there. I was there with my wife. We were very happy with the use of the VAR in the World Cup. But again, if a referee is using too many times, it's the problem not with the VAR, is the problem with the referee.
We've kept you here for an hour and nearly an hour and a half. If I can just ask you one more question, and it's a question I ask a lot to a lot of the guests that we have, depending on what they've done. But, I mean, you've refereed in three World Cups, you've refereed Olympic Games, you've refereed internationals around the world. Do you have either a game or a moment that is your... that is your most favourite memory from your refereeing career?
I must tell you something. To be the first linesman in the final, I think it is a big moment, because few referees were in the final, and also a few linesmen were in the final. And if I'm one of them, coming from a small country, I'm very proud with my career, thanks to FIFA, because they support me all the time. Even 4 years, I had no games, but I'm very happy. And you know, I'm traveling everywhere in the world till today. Everybody knows me. And if you call me about a game 38 years, which happened before, I think it's a good feeling for me. Not many referees had the same chance like I had. And thanks to you. And you know, 1.5 hour, it's no overtime.
I'm sure the guys will agree. I mean, like I say, I've spoken to you before, and we talked about a lot of football. We talked about a lot of things, and when I spoke to Gary and Stephen and said, you know, I think Abraham's going to come on the podcast, I said, all you're going to need to do is just sit back and listen, because he has all the most wonderful stories in the world. And I think, like I say, hopefully the listeners are going to love listening to the hour and a half that that Steve and Gary and I have had the pleasure of listening to. Gary, have you had a good time?
I mean, I don't think I've ever in my life, and I don't think I ever will again, have the privilege, the sheer privilege of speaking to a guy who shared a football pitch with so many outstanding, the greatest footballers in the history of the world. You know, I mean, so, you know, it's been an absolute privilege, Abraham. So a massive thanks to coming on there. And it's been a joy to talk to you. You've been such an entertaining and an easy guy to talk to. So thank you so much.
Thank you for all the three.
Steve.
You. And we enjoyed our speak, our interview. I enjoyed very much your questions.
Oh, don't worry. I tried to do my best. It was wonderful, yeah.
Well.
You were brilliant. Brilliant.
Oh, you've been brilliant.
One day, if you come to Israel, let me know. If I come to England, I'm used to come there because I have a good friend in Arsenal, David Dane. He's a very good friend of mine. He always invites me to come to see. We have been there 2 years ago in one of the games. And next time I will come to see Arsenal, who are not professional today, not so good today. I'm very sorry for them. But still, Liverpool is the best team today in the world. And I like
good man, Abraham.
Good man. He's a good coach.
The right answer. Steven, so we've listened to Abraham, and then right at
fantastic.
The end, he's told you that Liverpool are also the best team. How's your night been?
It doesn't get any better than that, Stu. Abraham, I would say, add to that, when Stuart, you know, told us about this and the fact that, you know, we might be able to swing this as a podcast, we were absolutely delighted about it. And it was strange because when we were coming up with ideas for podcasts as well, we'd actually mentioned, you know what we've never done? We've never had a referee on. And then when Stuart said, you know, we've a good chance of Abraham coming on, and we just thought, yeah, that's the referee to end all referees. We never need another referee on again now. You've absolutely put the cherry on the cake there for us, Abraham. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you very much, Abraham.
Bye-bye.
Obviously, all that's left for me to say is thank you to the listeners. And I can't promise we'll have another guest like Abraham. But again, please join us again next time on the Love Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.